Blog Talk Radio.
Entry, 923, I'll give you a correct address, but you have a fire in a one-story, ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. We're getting to traffic control, squad 5. Angle to 273, 273. Angle Battalion 18, 18 Battalion. With the 273, 273.
Good evening, everybody. Robbie Fisher, training chair, Fools International. And that was not our intro for our show. I'm going to start that intro right now. This is what we were wanting to do. That's our intro. I don't know whose other intro that is. My apologies, but welcome to the show tonight. I just got a text message from Brian Root, who was going to give us an update on convention 2018, and he's working tonight, and he just got a run, so we'll see if he can turn and burn and get back here and join the show and give us a quick update. If not, before we end the show, I'll give you guys an update. I have a little bit of an idea what's going on there. It's the holidays, and hopefully you're all having a good holidays. Man, it seemed like it just came upon us real quickly. Our last show was October 30th. On the show, I had the 2017 Dana Hannon recipient Ryan Cole on. And this show tonight is our last show for 2017. Our next show is going to be in 2018 is going to be on, we're staying on Monday night. It's going to be on Monday, February 12th. So I'm not going to be here for the show. I will be in Italy with my wife and some friends. So somebody from the board is going to have you guys, on that night, but I won't be here. As always, we want to thank Penwell and Fire Engineering and Bobby Halton for giving us an opportunity to be on Blog Talk Radio. We enjoy Blog Talk. It's a great opportunity for us to be able to connect in with everybody in the Fools. So, like I said, glad to be here. I'm responding back to Root right now. That's what you're probably hearing. So I got to tell you, I'm excited tonight for our guest. I got Colleen Murphy on tonight. Your e-board, your Fools International e-board, we first heard her at the Rosecrans conference in Chicago this past September. And during her talk, it was just like the right mix of family, firefighter, and behavioral issues, or everything that kind of goes in with all of that. It was just perfect thinking that, this would be great to have her on coming into December for our last show. So I reached out to her in September while we were back at Rosecrans to see if she'd be able to join. So she is going to be on here with us here in a little bit. Richie was supposed to call in. I don't know. Maybe he's out and about. It's just me and Colleen right now. I'm going to get moving on. Before we get on with our guests, to just remind everybody that it is the holidays. This is a difficult time for people dealing with depression. And hopefully you're joining us tonight. Hopefully you get something out of it. And that if there's ever a time that you are in need just to want to talk to somebody, please know that you're not alone. Reach out, grab a friend, grab a family member, a coworker, somebody, and reach out and let them know that you just want to talk. So, Line of duty deaths for this year, we're at 85. We've already had 4 this month alone. That includes the brother that lost his life on the fire lines down there in California. So I want to do a moment of silence. You know, this moment of silence, it's not just for our brothers and sisters that have gone before us, but let's also think about the thousands of firefighters that are on the fire lines today in California. Thank you. Okay, moving on with the guests. We don't have Richie. I don't have Brian Root here. So we're going to move on right into our guest this evening. Tonight's guest is Colleen Murphy. She's the spouse of a firefighter, mother of 2, and a peer support team member in Illinois. Like I said, we first heard her when we were in Rosecrans at the Rosecrans Symposium in Chicago last September. So welcome to the show, Colleen Murphy.
Hey, Rob.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for having me. Good,
yeah.
How are you?
So tell me, we were talking before, how's the family? You guys were dealing with the flu and everything else. Everybody doing okay?
Yes, I'm hoping that the worst of it is over before the holiday. So maybe, you know, getting through it sooner rather than later is going to make Christmas break a little better. So we're on the
I completely... Good. I completely agree. My wife and I dealt with a little bit of respiratory issue, and we're getting ready to go down to Vegas to see the kids and our granddaughter.
Nice.
And definitely do not want to be sick while we're down there.
Yes, I agree. Awesome.
So tell me, how does the wife of a firefighter come to join peer support or a peer support team? What's your story? How did that come about?
Well, it started with me making a lot of mistakes, to be perfectly honest. You know, when I married my husband, he was a carpenter, and he still is a carpenter. But there were subtle changes that started to take place once he was hired on to a fire department that I didn't really catch right away. For example, you know, when he was framing houses, he would come home and he was just completely exhausted, could care less about the condition of the house or whether or not it had been vacuumed, things of that nature. And then he got on the fire department and he would come home and start almost like psychoanalyzing how I was doing the dishes and like what order they needed to be placed in the dishwasher and things of that nature. And I thought, what the heck happened? Like, what, since when do you care, you know, about how the dishes are being done? And then later down the road, I was able to connect that a lot of that was coming from the firehouse, and didn't realize how much of that was trickling back home and things that I was starting to take personally that I really shouldn't have, and just ways to adapt and accept and understand maybe it's got nothing to do with me.
So was there a particular incident that you got connected with the Illinois peer support team, or did you just were doing this on your own for a period of time, then all of a sudden you met somebody that like, hey, you're like me, you've been doing the same things, and that's how you got in?
Yeah, no, I wish I could say that. I think what happened was because my husband and I were starting to struggle. And then when things got better for the two of us, I started thinking, hey, you know what? Maybe I could talk to your academy, you know, all the new hires, and just give me like 10, 15 minutes with those guys, just like a little commercial, if you will, to say, hey, if you notice that these things are starting to happen to you, don't panic. They're actually pretty normal, and there's probably a lot of other spouses out there who could relate. And just as I was about to do that, I'll never forget, my husband came home, and he's like, all right, you know, if you want to do this, you got 10 minutes. The academy is next week. I can throw you in there. He was teaching building construction, and he was trying to give me a little window to chat to the guys. And then I found out at a – another department not far away, there was a woman that was giving a presentation on something very similar that I was planning to talk about. So my husband said, hey, why don't you go to her class and you maybe you can connect with her. Well, long story short, the day of the class, I found out it was for firefighters only. So I called the woman teaching the class and I said, hey, what about the wives? And she said, oh, gosh, I'm so buried in firefighter behavioral health that I don't even have time to get to the family. What did you have in mind? So I told her, you know, my idea of what I kind of wanted to do for my husband's department. And she really liked it. So she connected me to the peer support team. And it just sort of grew from there. And I love the concept of peer support because, you know, I don't think there's really anything better than somebody else who's sort of lived it to help support you along the way. So nobody's going to get a wife like another wife might, just like the way that peer support works. And I mean, Rob, are you familiar with how peer support works?
I just joined as a result of being at the Rosecrans Symposium and meeting a number of people.
Okay, cool.
One of four members in my smaller department that is peer support trained, and we are just getting ours off the ground. So that was going to be the next question. Let's just talk a little bit about what peer support is, and then go ahead and plug, you know, your peer support team, because I think you guys are probably the biggest peer support team in the nation, if I'm correct. So
yeah. So Illinois Firefighter Peer Support is similar to like a dispatch would be, where say somebody from Bloomington or Hanover Park can put in a request on their own and say, hey, I'm struggling with ice rescue. And then it goes out to all of the members of the team, and someone who may have had a similar call can respond and give that person support. And what's nice about it is sometimes when guys talk to each other at work, they don't want to let on too much because nobody likes to feel like the weakest link, right? So they kind of hide if something is bothering them. This gives them the opportunity to talk to someone who's never met them before but does the job. And I think that's really important. It's pretty similar, you know, for the wives too. It's very rare that a wife from, you know, say my husband's department is going to come up to me and say, hey, you know, we're really struggling and start laying out some of their personal issues because our husbands work together. So what's unique is when somebody calls me via peer support and asks for maybe a resource or a book I may have mentioned, something like that, I have no idea who or their husband is. And I think that, you know, takes down some of the threat about being judged.
It does. And this is the one thing that I think the law enforcement, the police have done, you know, fairly well in the past, where the fire department hasn't, and that's trying to connect the, because, you know, as being a first responder, we do and see things that most people don't ever deal with or ever will see. And mm-hmm. we have different lives in our personal lives and, you know, in our life at work, our schedules are weird. What we see, how we do things is different. The makeup of a firefighter and a police officer, they're different than your basic person, because it takes a unique individual to do some of the things that we do in public safety. Where
Absolutely.
The law enforcement community has really, they've made that connection before, and they said, you know, somebody that is involved in a, you know, an officer involved shooting, for instance, the team of individuals mm-hmm. that's helping them deal with it, they are officers. You know, you don't have mm-hmm. firefighters on that team talking with them about, because I cannot relate to a police officer that's been involved in a shooting.
Sure.
Nor could a
right.
police officer sitting on mine, like, you know, what is it like to, you know, to do some of the stuff we do as firefighters? And so mm-hmm. the concept of peer support, I think, is awesome. And
I agree.
And I think we're, I think the one thing that gets a little bit confusing is individuals immediately think, well, peer support, we are counselors. We are ready to step in, and like if they were meeting with some, you know, professional, we're not.
Right.
And we're
right.
just, mm-hmm. yeah, we're just somebody that can relate to their situation with the ability to help them if there are problems, help them connect with other resources down the road.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, too, when it's a little more relatable and you take the title doctor away, it makes it easier to open up, because some people are intimidated by that. You know, they think if they sit down in, say, a therapist office, they're afraid in some ways that, you know, they're going to be judged, so to speak, which isn't necessarily true. But I think it's nice that they have the option to start with peer support, and a good peer support person who's been trained knows when it's appropriate to say, hey, I'm going to refer you to a professional or whatever the case may be. But sometimes all it takes is just a little conversation and somebody relating to you to validate some of the stuff you're going through to help you along the way. So it's an awesome thing to have.
The one thing we say is, and I started the show off, is like, if you have problems, reach out. Don't think that you're alone, but reach out and
mm-hmm.
talk to somebody, because getting that conversation started is key, which, as you well know, as a peer support member. And
mm-hmm.
if we look at, just in a regular relationship, two people that have very similar interests, they could sit there and they could talk for hours about,
of course.
You know, woodwork or whatever they do, or carpentry work. They could talk for hours,
mm-hmm.
just the same as
mm-hmm.
somebody that has dealt with something and somebody who is currently dealing with something. And it's a very similar situation. They could talk for hours, and maybe that talk is what really helps that person get to the other side and to realize, one, you know, I'm no different than anybody else. And two, you know, I probably
mm-hmm.
need a little bit more help, and I need to, you know, get myself moving in the right direction. And that,
definitely.
And that's basically our job.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just interject really quick while
sure.
well, we just got a second here. Just one, if you want to call in, if you're listening live and you want to call in and participate or have a question for Colleen, comment, statement, you know, the phone number is 760-454-8852. I'm running the board and talking at the same time. So if you get in there and you seem like it's ringing for a long period of time, Just be patient. I'll get you. The other thing is, Colleen had mentioned the Illinois Firefighter Peer Support Team, and they have a website. It's I as in Ida, L as in Lincoln, FFPS.org. You can go to their website. There's a lot of information on there.
Mm-hmm.
They are, from what I understand, they are the largest peer support team in the nation, very active. They're always at Rosecrans. They've traveled all around the nation helping other jurisdictions develop their peer support program. That's where I first heard about it. And so go ahead and visit them, and it can help you out with maybe starting your own or any other information that you might need. So, all right, Colleen, mm-hmm. moving on. Let's talk about Rosecrans.
Yes.
What was your talk on, and how did you get involved with that?
So Dan DeGrace, who is from Chicago Fire Department, had reached out to me, shortly after the first symposium that they had done, and asked if I would be interested in presenting on family in this past September. So that's sort of how I got brought in. And then he had seen my presentation once before. I traveled to different departments throughout the country and talk about all kinds of different topics that come up for the majority of families within the fire service. Some of them have affected me personally, and some of them I've never dealt with, but I tried to pick things that come up the most that would benefit the majority, so to speak. And one of the things that I was able to do in an effort to make that a little more real was I completed 80 hours of ride time where I traveled to different departments and I jumped on the back of a rig for 12-hour shifts. And it helped me draw parallels between what I see at home and what I saw on the job and how they affect each other. Everything from the marriage down to the parenting style. So once I gathered enough information, I sort of put together a PowerPoint and got invited to a department, and it just sort of snowballed from there. And I've been lucky enough that so far, usually when I present, that leads to the next audience and the next and the next. So that's how I wound up at Rose Grants. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we were talking earlier about your life and the family life. You and your husband are really busy. So that kind of ties into this whole thing. Why don't you kind of describe your guys' lives?
Sure. So between the two of us, we have, let's see, four jobs. So he's a firefighter. He is a carpenter. I own two companies. I run a hair salon, and I just opened a microblade studio. And, you know, the reason I like to put that out there is because, you know, sometimes when people are listening to each other, they'll start to say things like, well, give me a break. She doesn't even have kids. Or she's a stay-at-home mom. Or he only works on 24 and then he's off 48. And we start instantly judging each other's schedules because we think somebody else has it easier. And that's really not the case. Sometimes it's just a matter of what phase of life is that person in, because there's going to be times where, you know, my life will coast. Maybe both my kids will be in school and I'll have a lot more free time than I do right now, or vice versa. So I'm just, you know, careful to let everybody know we're stretched pretty thin, especially in December. I think most of us are. And that's pretty normal. You can still be in a healthy, successful relationship and accomplish all of those other things. There's always going to be outside factors that are taking time away from you, your family, or your relationship, and you can definitely work through them.
So it's going to take a team effort to be able to do everything that you guys are doing. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. The one I'd like, you know, when you were saying, well, you know, maybe they, you know, the things that are going on at home, or, you know, they only got one kid or they don't have any kids. My favorite one is when, like, oh, you're a stay-at-home mom. Not that I am, but
right.
You're a stay-at-home mom. Oh,
yeah.
You're just a stay-at-home mom. You tell a stay-at-home
right.
mom that's all she does, and that's not a job. You get yourself clobbered.
Exactly. And honestly, I mean, I don't have what it takes to be a stay-at-home mom. And I find it easier to run two companies, if that tells you anything. So I have to believe that I'm doing my children a service by only being home part of the time, because if I'm burned out, it definitely starts to show up. And, that's not good either. It's all about balance.
Well, my wife said when our son was two, you know what? It's time for me to go to work. I kind of got to do something.
Uh-huh.
And that's something. I mean, we could go on a whole nother show on this thing, but
that's
something to be thought of, is that, like, staying at home and also having your personal life and being able to, you know, feel like you are contributing to society other than just being a parent and taking care of the kids, but having your professional
mm-hmm.
life and all those other things. Those are all important to your psyche and just being, you know,
absolutely.
Feeling good about yourself. So, but
mm-hmm.
we could talk for hours on all that. So let's
get
into
the
meat and potatoes. Let's
okay.
get into the meat and potatoes, and let's talk about One of the things that I remember from your presentation, and I do have some notes from your presentation that I took. We talked about the personality types and you know, and how they tie or how they relate to work and home. So do you want to kind of break down some of that stuff for us and get us started?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So here's how it works. There's four different personality types that each of us fall into naturally. You're born this way. And just roughly, we'll say 80% of your character is going to fall into one of these categories. And then the other 20% will fall into a secondary category. Now, there's a lot of different theories out there, and there's subcategories and things like that, but this is the easiest way for me to explain it, to keep it, you know, simple across the board. So the first category is an expressive personality. Now, someone who's expressive is really easy to figure out because we usually talk with our hands, and we're the most animated people that you know. So expressives are, you know, the life of the party, we're the class clown, it's the guy at the, you know, firehouse table at dinner time and he's mocking somebody or he's doing an impression and everybody's laughing. These are also creative people. Expressives as a parent are usually seen as the fun one to the children, which is a blessing and a curse at times. But they're pretty spontaneous and they're great at getting down to a child's level. So that's what's good about the expressive. What's difficult about an expressive is we have poor time management skills. So you could see where, you know, in the fire service, this is pretty frowned upon, especially because it's such a structured organization. So if you have an expressive who's showing up like on the dot for their shift instead of 15 minutes early, that could be the difference of, you know, one of the guys getting stuck on a call that could run 2 hours or getting out of work on time. And then expressives at home, you know, running late, depending on what personality type you're married to, because we have poor time management skills, we usually drive our partners nuts with not being organized. That's the biggest complaint I hear. And I'm an expressive and I hear it all the time. So that's the expressive.
Hey, Colleen.
And then, yeah.
I just so I can interject, I am an expressive
Go ahead.
As well.
Yeah, oh, good. So you
I am
get
an,
it. You get it.
Yeah, and all of these fit. If anybody that's listening, they know me. They know that this is exactly me. And when you said they're the fun one, yep, I'm like an Uncle Dad. So I'm the fun one. I'm the fun one of the parents. And then you totally nailed me on this poor time management. I'm getting ready to do my personal evaluation. I got to do it on myself. And for years, that's always one thing that comes up is Rob needs to work on time management. And I still need to work on today. And then the last thing is you said, I'm not organized. It drives my wife nuts. Nuts.
Uh-huh.
So I am.
Yep,
you just hit right on me. So I'm there with you.
But we usually we make up for it with being funny, right? Like expressives are usually the person you want to bring with you to the party because we make it easier for everybody else. You wouldn't be on the radio if you were one of the other personality categories. It takes an expressive to be that social.
Well, face it, we're just fun. That's period. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, period. End of story. But I will share really quickly, especially because, you know, we're talking about the holidays and depression being really high. Be careful with expressives because we're awesome at expressing emotion and living in animation, but that also makes us masters at hiding our feelings. So you can see where this is a slippery slope for some people. And it can be really tricky if you're raising an expressive because there could be something really heavy going on and they're good at masking that kind of pain. So I just always like to put that out there.
And I think that a lot of firefighters, not all of them, but I think a lot of firefighters probably fall into the expressive person because they,
sure.
you know, firefighters are fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not always really organized. There are some anal ones, and I know you're going to get onto those, but,
sure.
but firefighters in at least in my experience of 30 years, we see a lot of things and we like, let's joke about it. And then
yep.
let's package that away and let's move on. And,
mm-hmm.
so I can totally see how it could be an issue.
Definitely.
All right. So what's one of the other ones?
So then the next category is an amiable, and amiables are always the quietest people, you know. I've never met an amiable who wasn't 100% introvert. They have one pace in life, and it's slow motion, which, again, that's a blessing and a curse. It's great when it comes to children because, here's an example, if an amiable has to sit down and, say, do math homework with a fifth grader, they'll go over the same problem 25 times and never lose their cool. So that's awesome. But probably
mm-hmm.
the biggest complaint I hear about amiables is because they live in slow motion, the other personalities have a hard time motivating them to move quickly. So you could see where on the scene of a fire, this would create major conflicts. The other nice thing about amiables is they're not opinionated people. They might have opinions, but their delivery is pretty soft, and you won't be offended, I guarantee it. My dad is an amiable. He's probably one of those most humble people I've ever met in my life, and just so incredibly patient. The hard thing about amiables when it comes to, say, parenting or leadership is they don't like confrontation at all. So they will do whatever it takes to keep the peace. Even if it goes against every single bone in their body, they'll just totally avoid it because they
mm-hmm.
like things to be calm and smooth and steady.
So I have some of those.
I
have some of those characteristics. I do like the things. When I'm at home, I like things to be calm, cool, and steady, and just moving through some stuff.
Definitely. Well, and that's me. I mean, my personality is an expressive amiable. So I'm 80% expressive, and I'm 20% amiable. It's, you know, somebody would probably call me bipolar in a way if you think about it, because they're so extreme opposites. But it is what it is. I'm pretty sure my husband would say that, actually, for sure. But, yeah, it's an interesting mix, as you know.
Okay.
Sounds like you're living it, too.
Yes, absolutely. So real quickly, let me interject. I got Brian Root. He's calling in between
yeah.
calls right now. So speaking of an expressive person, I'm going to bring on Brian Root, who is the Puget Sound. He's the Puget Sound Fools president. He's going to give us a quick update on the 2018
Perfect.
Fools Convention.
Okay.
Hey, Robbie.
Root
how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. Sorry about that. I literally had the phone in hand to dial, and then the pager went off. So, c'est la vie.
Okay.
So, where we're at with early convention planning, I'm happy to say that I've managed to broker a deal with my own department, the Seattle Fire Department Training Division, and we've secured our training facility for our hands-on training. Which we plan to have 2 days of to end the convention. So that would be Saturday, September the 8th, and Sunday, September the 9th. Our plan is to put on a choice of two different classes, both very well-known in the fire service and highly sought-after instructors. So on the truck side of things, we'll be having Brothers in Battle. Cody Trestrail, as you know, is the head of Brothers in Battle, and they put on a fantastic basic and advanced science course. So that's what we'll be doing for those truck-minded individuals. On the engine company side of things, on the engine company side of things, we're going to do the 2-day nozzle forward. I happen to be fortunate enough to be on the tailboard with Aaron Field, so I didn't really have to reach out too far to go after that as another option. So he's going to assemble his cadre of instructors, and our plan is to run two classes at separate parts of the training facility. We'll have room for 20 in each class, and in order to broker this deal, I had to throw something in for the Seattle Fire Department. So we're going to hold 10 spaces for each class for ops members of Seattle Fire Department. Now, if those don't happen to fill up for whatever reason, then I'm sure we'll have a waiting list of people in the pools, and we'll just plug people in as their name comes up on the list. So that's what we've got so far. We're working on scheduling our Friday classroom lecture. I don't want to be presumptive and even say what the plans are, because I'd hate for it to not work out. But trust me, another highly sought after a couple of individuals were knocking on their doors for Friday training. So that's what we've got. We've got the usual convention itinerary with plenty of things to do around the city, plenty of things for spouses and families to do, and no shortage of fellowship and brotherhood.
Well, I'm thinking, because as you and I both know, being from the Seattle area, in September, the weather is usually pretty dang nice. So I'm hoping for good weather on that that week we're going to be here.
I don't generally like to gamble, but if forced into it, I'd put my money on that time of year for sure. So, again, fingers crossed. But even if it's less than perfect, it's still pretty darn good.
Awesome. Well, brother, I appreciate you coming on and giving us an update. You'll get another opportunity when we have our next show in February. And as always, you know, be safe and enjoy that time on 8-4.
Yeah, no problem. I got to go and decon a boot right now. So that's the fun I'm having for today.
All right, brother. Take care. Thanks for coming
managed
on.
Managed to find my way into a wicked three-coiler.
Oh, boy. You're killing me.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was a little break, Colleen. I apologize. That's the
No worries.
Hey, go back to that expressive. That's just the way things work. I'm going to be disorganized, and we're just going to come at it from various angles. So just to kind of catch us back up. Perfect. See, there you go. You fit.
Yeah.
So we've talked.
Yeah, seemed to flow.
We've talked about the expressive. You're finishing up amiable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was just saying how amiable they like to avoid confrontation, which can be really hard when it comes to problem solving on and off the job. They just, you know, they're big on keeping the peace, so they'll do whatever it takes to not create a ruckus of any kind. So, yeah, that's amiable. And then the third category is the driver. And I see a lot of drivers drawn to first responder jobs. And I have to believe it's because drivers thrive in structure. And they love rules. Their whole world is black and white. These are really dominant, strong figures. I don't think I've ever met a driver that wasn't in some type of leadership role. I joke that, you know, my husband is a driver to the point that I call him the slave driver, because he's one of those people that, you know, when he was framing houses, he wouldn't give his guys lunch until they looked like they were ready to pass out. And it's because, you know, he thought, well, they get lazy after they eat. So he would, like, keep pushing them and pushing them and pushing them. I'm like, geez, you know, but drivers live in fast forward, and there's only focus in life is results. Okay, so They don't take time for relationships. They don't have time for your feelings. They're too busy working. That's just how drivers roll. And I think drivers in the fire service are certainly needed, but they struggle socially a lot because a lot of times their messages are spot on, but the delivery is horrible. I don't know if you can relate to that, Rob, but I'm thinking about it sometimes just from like a parenting style. You know, I think drivers struggle to slow down for their children. So let's say, you know, we'll use the math problem again. They'll be starting to explain homework, and before you know it, they're like, just give me the page, I'll do it myself. Because they don't have time to slow down and explain it, so they just take over. And I've seen it in the firehouse, too, where guys, you know, there was a situation not long ago, there was a chainsaw that was broken out at one of the stations. And one of the newer guys was like, well, isn't there a trick to starting this? Like, you got to switch a lever or whatever it is. And I watched my husband, like, start to kind of explain it while the new guy was holding it. And it was like seconds before he said, here, just give it to me, I'll do it. And I thought, he's never going to learn anything if you keep, you know, taking it away from him. But I'm not a firefighter, so what do I know? But that's really common. And the reason I like to point that out is for anybody who's married to a driver, I think a lot of times the spouses of the drivers begin to feel inadequate rather quickly. And that's because the driver is always pushing them to hurry up on something. So that's really common. What's great about the driver are these are extremely organized people. They are goal and task oriented. And I think that's great inside any type of first responder because they thrive in structure. But here's what it looks like at home. There are times where, you know, it's a summer day and I'm like, hey, you know, I was thinking about maybe we should go to the zoo this afternoon. And, you know, right after he gets done flipping out that it, like, wasn't on our list of things to do, the car is, like, already packed. He's got the directions in his phone. The children are in their seatbelts. And I'm like, well, I guess I should take a shower and get ready then. You know, like, he's always 10 steps ahead of me on that kind of stuff.
And then you're going to be late.
Right, and then he's waiting on me. You know, so then it becomes a pace and priority issue for the married couple because, you know, he's moving at a super fast pace and she might not see it as a priority. Like, you know, she just thought it was going to be something fun and suddenly it turns into this mission where hurry up, we got to get this done and it has to be completed by this time. And that's typical of a driver. Sometimes it's, you know, I meet a lot of wives who are drivers too. I have yet to meet a driver married to another driver. I think that might look like two beta fish in a tank, like when they just start pummeling the heck out of each other. They would be attracted to each other.
Yeah, I want to say my wife, I'm the expressive and my wife is the driver. She definitely more organized, result-oriented. She's waited on me because I'm disorganized or because I'm trying to do something. She's the planner. So like, you know, I said earlier in the show, we're going to be going to Italy. The trip to Italy. She's planning the trip to Italy because those are things that she does really well. And in fact, a lot of our friends, she enjoys searching on the internet for these deals and deals for airfare and everything. And that's what she does really well, what she enjoys doing. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show that she sits in that driver role where she likes the ability to be able to get that information, get the results, and then spill it out. So,
absolutely.
Right, so the next one.
Yeah. So the last category. Oh, I was just going to say, if you're confused about who you're married to, an easy way to tell during the holidays is if you buy a driver a Christmas present, this is really common, they'll never show expression. So, like, they'll open it up. Say you bought your wife a sweater, right, and you're thinking, oh, she's going to love this. This is totally her style. I just know it. She opens it up on Christmas Day, and the first thing she says is, well, what size is it? Where is it from? Does it shrink in the wash? All right. Well, we'll see. Drivers are very practical, logical thinkers.
Yeah.
So they're never
yep.
going to be the type of person that opens something up and says, oh, I love it. That just doesn't happen. So I find sometimes, you know, their spouse is like offended or kind of hurt in a way by their lack of response. And it's really nothing personal. That's just their makeup. That's how they are. So, yeah, it's always comical around the holidays. And same thing with children who are drivers. They're very similar, you know, in their responses. They don't receive things the same way that, say, the expressive would. And then the last category is an analytical. And analyticals love numbers. They always stick to the facts, and they don't really care for details. So think of like an attorney or an accountant or a banker. They're another personality type that loves the black and white. Their entire life is on a spreadsheet. It's all about charts and numbers and things of that nature. What's awesome about an analytical is, much like the driver, they're incredibly organized people. But they, too, struggle socially, and here's why. The example that I use, my sister-in-law, she's an amazing person. I love her to death, but as an expressive, I'll never forget, like, the few times when we first met and we would converse, I had a hard time, like, socially interacting because it would sound something like this. She would call and say, hey, Colleen, last we spoke, you said that you were traveling to different departments throughout the country and doing presentations on family life for people inside the fire service. Is this still true? And I'd be like, yes, it is. It almost feels like the conversation is more of an interrogation, but they don't mean
mm-hmm.
anything by it. They're just searching for the answers, and they like to get right to the point. So sometimes the other personality types are taken back by that. And I see this a lot in the fire service, because the other thing to know about analyticals is they're great test takers naturally, right? They're awesome. They ace those things. But then you hear guys say things like, can you believe he got promoted? He's horrible. He doesn't know how to talk to anyone. But I'm like, hold on, guys. I mean, that's only one side of it, right? The social side. They could probably solve the national budget in their office with the door closed, and they really don't care what you're doing for the holidays, and that's just how they are and who they are. And you just sort of have to learn not to take them personally, but they certainly have their place. And, anytime I need, something solid when it comes to business, like numbers or anything direct, I always seek out one of my analytical friends or family members, because they'll set me straight right away. And much like the driver, you know, they're not there to save the relationship, so they will very quickly give you a thought or an opinion, whether it hurts or not, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are the four. And then, like I explained earlier, you know, we all fall into one of those naturally. That's what you were born with. But there's always somebody, and I completely understand this, when I do presentations, they'll say, you know, Colleen, I hear what you're saying, but I'm kind of a little bit of all of those, right? Well, I agree with them. I think that's probably true. But you were really only born to be one naturally, and then you had your secondary. And then life experience brought you the rest of the categories. Like for me, you know, I was born an expressive amiable, but in business, so later in life, I became driver analytical. That's because of, you know, the different interactions I had in negotiations and so on and so forth. But that didn't come naturally. I had to learn that. And then, you know, the older you get, the more wisdom you have, because you've worked different experiences in your life, and maybe you realize what I am naturally isn't working under these circumstances, so you try something different, and then you slowly evolve into all four, which is awesome.
Now, other than the two drivers that we were talking about earlier that probably would have a very difficult time being together, is there any other combinations that make it very difficult for dealing with in relationship or dealing with, you know, just everyday life?
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't know that I've ever seen two of the same. I think it goes back to, like, the whole yin and yang theory, right? You kind of seek out what you don't have. You know, my husband, I always say he's my other half, and that's no joke. He brings everything to the table that I am not, and vice versa. So I think, you know, naturally we're attracted to that. And I'm kind of glad you bring this up, because I think this is where a lot of people fool themselves into thinking their marriage might be in trouble if they don't have things in common with their spouse. Because usually, you know, if somebody's dating, they look for similarity, some common ground, right? That's what draws you together. And then when you're married and those things run out, you start to feel like you're doomed, but not necessarily. Sometimes embracing your opposites is what draws you closer together. You don't necessarily have to have everything in common to keep your relationship alive. You just have to support each other, you know, and what their interests may be. And that is what's going to create a connection and a long-lasting friendship. So I think getting back to, you know, the different personality types, without even realizing what category the person you're attracted to may be, you just naturally, there's something in them that you might not have, and it's attractive.
Now, we said that with the expressive, that could be trouble with somebody that could be in trouble or having difficulties, that they can hide it. Is that the case with the other three, or it just always seems like the analytical person's always a jerk?
I know, and I hate to pick on them, because they're not always a jerk. It's just that they, again, I think because they're introverted, that they struggle to fit in socially because it's not a priority for them. You know, a lot of analyticals I meet, introverts find comfort in their own thoughts. So, like, they are perfectly comfortable and confident in being alone. It's us that thinks it's weird, you know, where we're like, oh, my God, I can't believe they just go in the office and shut their door. Well, that's weird to us, but that's comforting to them. And that's also the difference between introverts and extroverts. You know, I think it's interesting. Extroverts always want to pull an introvert out of their shell. But I've never seen an introvert try and get an extrovert to be quiet and calm down. You know, so I'm an extrovert, right? And my husband's an introvert.
Yep.
I remember, you know, when young into our relationship, I would go out and I'd be like, hey, I invited your buddies over because I'm not going to be home. And he'd be like, why did you do that? I'm like, well, I didn't want you to be alone. He'd be like, I like being alone. I couldn't understand that. I'm like, wait, what? I just thought, you know, you needed something to do. He's like, no, I really don't. Stop doing that. It would be just as weird if he brought me to a party and said, Colleen, I just want you to keep to yourself. I'd be like, well, why? There's a lot of people here. These are some of my friends. You know, it's weird, right? So, yeah, that works both ways. And we're always trying, you know, extroverts are always trying to convert people. No, don't be quiet. Nothing wrong with being quiet.
That's funny. So let's talk about the difference between trouble at work and trouble at home, or how those two tie together.
Yeah, so I think sometimes what happens is, and we talk about this in the presentation, there's a long story that goes with it, but we'll just use a generic one, a common one for everyone. Guys start to compare their home life to calls that they've been on. So, like, the one example I give is you've all been on a call where you had to pick up somebody who was completely intoxicated, belligerent, drunk, right? And it looked like when you got there, the person's life was in shambles, and you're like, Jesus, get it together. If that is your definition of somebody who drinks too much or has a drinking problem, then when you come home and your family member, say your wife, is like, hey, you're kind of drinking a lot. Well, if you're picturing what you're used to seeing on the back of the ambulance and she's never seen that, you're not going to understand each other. And it's really hard to find the balance between those extremes. You're both kind of right, you know, in a way, but I think because your spouse isn't on, well, for most of you, unless she's on the department with you, but that's rare, she's not seeing some of the same things. So even in, like, parenting, I've seen guys where, like, let's say your child breaks their arm, right? And he's like 6 or 7 years old. And then the firefighter, you know, is at the hospital with their kid and, like, drops this story of, like, yeah, this is bad, but I saw a guy get his arm shoved in a meat grinder one time. Yeah. Okay. You're right. But as far as, you know, the ratio of pain to your child, that is as bad as the meat grinder because they're only 6 or 7 years old. So they don't have those life experiences yet. So we still have to be somewhere in the middle of, like, compassionate, but then also understanding, of course, things could always be worse, right?
And that's
you just
got to
be really careful
sides.
How to handle that.
Yeah, and that's
I'm
on
sorry,
both sides. Because I know, I was going to say, that's on both sides because you know, you come home and my wife is sick and she's like, oh, I'm not feeling so good. I'm sick. I got a sore throat. I'm going, okay. Sick is this. Okay. You know, and it's difficult for firefighters. I think, and probably doctors and everybody else in the medical field are like, you know, to have that standard compassion that others, you know, that are not in those fields, because we see, as you're talking about, we see the extreme of things. And so our vision or, you know, our line of like, no, that's not sick. Let me show you. Let me tell you what sick was. Let me tell you what, you know, how bad sick is. And so it not only do I have to as the partner and as a firefighter, I have to understand where that line is and that I can't go too far beyond it because it's not their life. It's not what they see. Just the same as on the other side. They have to realize that, you know, they're not going to see that as being, you know, as bad or as extreme and have a little bit more patience until that person can get reeled back into reality to go, oh, wait a minute, I'm not at work. I'm at home with my family. So
yeah,
I totally get it.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes perfect sense why it happens. But, and one of the ways you can help find balance in that is, you know, talking about work with your spouse is huge because it lets them in and helps them understand where you're coming from. And, you know, sometimes they'll catch before you will when something's off, you know, because if that's what you're used to seeing all the time and you're starting to head towards like compassion fatigue and burnout, you might not even realize it in yourself. But if your spouse is noticing a change in you, he or she can, you know, be like, hey, you sound like maybe you need a break or we got to get you talking to somebody or a peer supporter or whatever it takes. But, that's where communication is really powerful. And a lot of times I hear guys, you know, they say, well, I don't want my wife to hear that. It'll freak her out and so on and so forth. And, you know, I always say to that, just know your audience. I mean, you can share things at home. If your wife is a really sensitive listener, you could say, you know, hey, we had a bad call last night. You know, a little kid got killed or whatever it was. And she'll get the gist of it. Or you might have the opposite. Maybe you're married to the ER nurse and like she wants every nitty gritty detail you can think of. And she might even one up you with one of the patients she had. I don't know, but, you know, get to know your partner and the more that you share, the more of a connection you have as a friend, and the easier it is for them to kind of keep an eye on you.
Well, it helps you. It helps you out when, you know, I think for the most part, everybody that I work with and knowing their spouses, probably the good majority, if not all of them, are interested in our work. And when you come home after the big call or whatever it is, they like to talk about it. They want to know about it, you know. And it's, anybody that's into, you know, to have a relationship, you got to be into that person, which means you're interested in the things that goes on in their life, the things that are, you know, we call the big call. Man, that was a good call. Well, I mean, it really wasn't a good call for somebody, but it was a good call for me because it was those challenging calls. So if that's my interest and to support, you know, it's having that relationship that they are interested in what you are interested in as well. So, but that's the thing I think about the fire service today that is great is that it seems like more of the spouses are interested, or if we were to go back in time to the firefighter of the 40s and the 50s, totally different, you know, society was different. Roles were different. You know, the husband could, he'd have a rough day at work, go to the bar, you know, call his wife, because not going to call her on the cell phone because they didn't exist back then, but say, I'll be home when I get home, and then go to the bar with his buddies and, you know, get drunk or whatever, and then come home, and there's no talking. It's like, let's have dinner and let's go to bed, type thing. So that's a good thing that I think we've done in society, that we're more connected in those ways and we're more open to that. Let's talk about the kid.
Absolutely.
How is the life of the kid in the fire service, and, you know, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think one of the most important things I learned along the way is about visual placement. And here's what I mean by that. So expose your children to the fire service as early as you can. You know, bring them to mommy or daddy's station and familiarize them with tiny, tiny details that go on inside the firehouse. Little things like, here's daddy's bunk, or this is the pantry that our shift uses. Here's the recliner that mommy or daddy sits in, and so on and so forth. And the reason for that is, in a child's mind, when the firefighter is absent from the home, say, you know, they're on shift, and if the kid is at home and they're starting to feel anxious about that parent being gone, say it's something as simple as, like, they heard about a tornado on the news, right? Then they start to panic, oh, my mom's at work or my dad's at work, and they start picturing worst case scenario. If they have those tiny little details to work with, it helps them visually place the absent parent in a safe place. So then I could say, you know, to my son, hey, buddy, you know, hold on a second. Remember the recliner that has the duct tape on it? And my son will be like, yeah. I'm like, he's probably sitting in that chair right now. Or do you remember the bed that has the, you know, fuzzy, furry-looking blanket? He's probably got his feet kicked up on that. You know, those tiny little details help them place you when you're not there, because to a child, if you don't fill in some of the blanks, their imagination will take off. And it is a lot of times way worse than reality. So that's why, you know, it's important, get them in there, you know, whenever you can, and constantly stressing the importance of safety. So if you're going to show them something on the truck, per se, you could say, hey, I wear this mask because it, you know, protects my face and it gives me oxygen, or I wear this coat so that I can't get burned, and so on and so forth. That's really important stuff.
One of the things I remember, a lot of the kids that come in and see dad, primarily it's dad, but come in and see dad, they know all the intricacies of dad's locker. You know, they'll be looking at the locker and they will go like, dad, where'd my picture go? They'll know that a picture is missing.
That's exactly right.
And they're very visual in that sense. And they know that. I mean, some of the kids that are fire nerds, you know, that are, they come into the fire station all the time, and they really get into everything. And some of the kids that are just a little bit quieter, they're not as interested, or, you know, that maybe they're intimidated by it. But the one thing that I think that always connects them is that when they're in dad's room and they, you know, dad's locker's there or mom's locker's in there, and they see that,
yeah.
they see that, that locker is family. You know, there's faces of their family
that's exactly
in there,
right.
and best friends. Yeah. So I get you. I
yeah,
get what you're
saying. That's awesome. Yeah, definitely.
Now,
and then since it is Christmas,
yep.
we could talk about that really quickly if you want. You know, the
now, Mike,
what it's like. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, my son, when he was younger, he knew that Christmas was never on Christmas, period.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, I'm, you know, that means that he was raised in a different environment than his friends. And it could give him, you know, it could have somewhat of an impact, I would think, on, you know, on how we do things, and that, you know, things are not as structured all the time.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think helps our children is, you know, every year is a little different depending on my husband's shift. And there's no guarantee that he can always get Christmas off, or, you know, in a perfect world, somebody would always trade with him so that he could be off Christmas morning. But that's not always the reality, depending which department you're at. But something that, you know, could help for our kids is when my son makes his wish list to Santa, he can put in a request for Santa to either show up a day early or a day late, you know, depending on what my husband's shift is going to be like. And my kids know that Santa has a different sleigh for different shifts. I mean, that's just how it has to be. And then, you know, in that, my children are also very familiar with, because this cracks me up, this is a time of year where, like, every child feels threatened. It's almost like getting a review. Santa's watching, right? So they're always on their best behavior. And then Christmas Day comes, and it's like all hell breaks loose, and they're like, I'm done behaving now. I got what I wanted, right? So we introduced, and this is pretty funny. You could, you know, the parents could Google this or YouTube, but have you ever heard of Rodney the Repo Reindeer?
No.
Okay, so Rodney the Repo Reindeer, he is a subcontractor for Santa Claus, and he will show up after Christmas and repo any toys that you may not be taking care of, or you've lost a privilege over because you're fighting with your siblings and so on and so forth. And there's a cute little, like, YouTube video clip that goes with it. It's pretty comical, but it shows, like, a brother and sister hitting each other. And then Rodney the Repo Reindeer is, like, flying through the air with his black Santa bag, and he's slowly pulling the toys out of the family room away from the children. It's pretty awesome.
It's almost like,
yeah,
it's a little modification of Shelf or Elf on the Shelf.
Yes. Yes, because, again, you know, that elf loses his luster on Christmas Day. So I don't know about you, but I need something throughout the year, you know, and Rodney is available in July. So it just seems to work for our family.
while we're talking about Christmas and kids, and I was texting back and forth with Richie, he just made himself available. So I'm seeing if I can just put him at the back end
definitely.
Of the show, and we can. But while we're talking about the kids, you know, one of the things that I think we could do that helps out our brother or our sister is, like, the younger guys that get on the job, they don't typically have the seniority to be able to, when they're, you know, they're a young family and they have young kids, they don't typically have the seniority, other than because of the shift rotation allows for them to have some Christmases off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I challenge our senior guys that, you know, their kids are 15, 16 years old, you know,
yeah,
what, you know, do your brother or sister a solid one, and step up and at least work the morning part of shift. You're coming off shift.
Absolutely.
At least work till noon.
Yeah.
And let that younger dad be able to be at home with their kids, and then they can
definitely
come into work later on. So take that into consideration when this Christmas is coming around, and the younger guys are, you know, trying to figure out how they're going to do Christmas with the kids. So,
yeah, I appreciate you saying that.
Let me just let Richie in on here, and
we'll
just talk a little bit about what he wanted to talk about. So this is probably a good spot to take a break.
Okay, sounds good.
So all right, Richie, we're letting you in on the conversation.
Oh, boy. How you doing, Colleen?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for doing the show for us tonight. We truly appreciate it. Giving Robbie a hand, we appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's an honor to be here.
I don't know about the honor part, but thanks for saying it. Robbie gets the honor quite often, so I think you'll agree.
Well, brother, how are you doing, man?
Good. Glad to be back home. It was a fun and interesting weekend. I'm sure you probably filled Colleen in a little bit. Flew out to Maine for the wake of P.J. Johnson, and it was interesting, sad, but great, all kind of combined in one. They had a beautiful service down by the water where they had the tugboats there, they had fire trucks there. And PJ was kind of unique. He was part of three different families. He had his own personal family. He had the fire service, and he had the tugboat. And it was really unique to see the three come together, and each three have its own distinct personalities and ways. And it was interesting to see, as these worlds came together, the dynamics of interaction. So that was kind of interesting. The other thing I would say is that his wife did a beautiful eulogy, but I don't think it's a eulogy. Reflection, maybe, a reflection. Yeah, it was beautiful, and his daughter even got up and spoke. And that was really nice. And then the fact that all the firefighters came from all over and seeing faces I haven't seen in 10 years and the instant bond and the reconnection. So it was great. We actually had to spend quite a bit of time with Susan, his widow now, which was great. So good weekend, hard weekend, but definitely was glad to get back home, which is funny. So I'm listening to Colleen talk to you. You guys talk about Christmas and things, and Christmas is around the corner. And me going was kind of a big deal in our house because I was gone for the week before teaching. And then unfortunately this happened. And I came home a day early from teaching to fly out. And I told my wife, because I love my wife. I swear my wife should probably talk to you, Colleen, because she'd be like, oh, my God, you guys like hit it off. Like, everything you talk about is probably your life. And I go, Jill, listen, because I'm kind of an ignorant, I can't say the other word, ass or whatever, you know, I'm bad. So I'm very black and white and blunt, and so I just tell her to listen, Jill, this is one of those times where I cannot read minds. If this is not the time for me to go, because you have too much Christmas shopping, the girls got midterms coming up, which they're in right now, everything else going, you need to tell me because I'm going to go. Like, if you're leaving the decision to me, my decision is I'm going. So this is one of those times where I need you to say, not a good time. And well, luckily she said I could go, so
Well said. Yeah, that's good.
So that's the part of the relationship thing in the fire service that, because we have such weird stuff that goes on, and I mean, not too many people can say, hey, we've got a really close brother, friend that has suddenly passed away, and there's 4,000 of his buddies and friends and family that are going to be meeting over here. I want to go do this during Christmas. I mean, it's already a hard time of the year to have something like this happen, let alone, all of the impact that it could have on the family at home. And Richie has older daughters, but when you change it and make them 8 years old and not 16 years old, it's a completely different situation and how it can cause problems within the family.
I was just thinking of something for you, Colleen. So I was thinking that I come home from teaching, right? And this was like 2 weeks ago. I taught a week down in Champaign, came home for a week, was gone a week, and then went away for that weekend to the service. So I come home and I'm talking to my cousin, who's a fireman, who teaches with me as well. And I'm telling him a story about something that happened down there when we were teaching. Ironically, not a good story, Robbie. The quick connect fittings came off the petroleum torch, dumped out a bunch of fuel, and the fireman was basically on fire in his gear. Not bad, but like, oh, my God, the fuel's leaking everywhere. He did nothing wrong. He's on fire. Like, holy Christ. And we're just laughing because recently we had a guy, he just burned his hand a little bit. It was a big deal investigation, and we're teasing our one buddy, like, well, since you let a guy in front of you, you just might as well pack up your stuff and go home. And I'm telling my cousin the whole story, and my wife's sitting there listening. She's like, well, you didn't tell me any of this. And I'm thinking, well, why would I?
Uh-oh.
And I'm not kidding. It's a true story. I go, like, well, why would I? You got home. I was doing my thing. You were on the phone, Facebook, texting, and this. And then my cousin calls your daughter's home longer than that. And I didn't think she'd want to know the story. Well, I didn't think the relevance to tell her the story.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of times what happened is there's so much camaraderie with you guys at work. And, like, after the call, you guys all sit around and talk about the call. So by the time you get home, it's almost like it lost its luster, because you've
mm-hmm.
already talked about it, you know, and then
mm-hmm.
your wife is kind of like getting the leftovers. So then she hears the story, and it's like 3 months after it happened, and you're just not even that excited about it anymore. But I think
yeah.
that's common, right? So yeah, I mean,
probably.
It's always, yeah, right? And because she wasn't there, sometimes, you know, my husband's like, it's just too much to explain. I'm like, okay. But, you know, on that note, I think sometimes what the spouse is looking for, and I can't speak for everyone, but I know at least for me, it's not so much the attention that I'm looking for, you know, when my husband comes through the door. It's more the connection. You know,
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen you in 24 or 48 hours. I'm only asking you the obvious questions, like how are work or how are you feeling, because I'm trying to connect with you. So it's not necessarily that I want to talk about work. It's that I'm trying to keep you my friend, right? And the only way to do that is to, you know, check in with each other. Because, you know, my husband and many guys, really, that I've talked to, always say things like, I don't understand, you know, my wife is saying that I don't spend enough time at home. Like, you just explained you were gone, you know, for a week teaching, and then you were back, and then you were gone again. It's not so much about the time that you have together. It's about the connection that takes place within the time, so the quality of the time. You know, like I tell my husband, we don't have to spend 3 days together. It would be great, but I don't expect it, because our life doesn't provide that type of schedule right now. But even if it's just 5 minutes a day, like, connect with me on something, right? Like, keep the love alive. So I don't know, maybe that's kind of what it's like for your wife too. That's just kind of how I see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
in addition, I think it's not just, it's like they want to feel equal, you know, that I can have this
or
conversation
included,
with
yeah.
my, yeah, included, equal, all that. I mean, the connection, it's that you can, I can be very, you know, very animated in telling a story and be all excited about it. And then, like, well, you didn't tell me that. Well, oh, you know, I didn't think, it's not that big of a deal. I didn't think there would, that, no, it's not. It's the fact that she wants to be a part, or she wants to be equal to that, and that, you know, I would come home
yeah.
and feel just as excited to express this. I mean, even though, or to tell the story, even though that it may be different telling to firefighters than it is telling to your spouse, but
sure.
I still owe her that same, that, you know, I'm going to share that same information and say, because it was important to me. So,
yeah. Well, while we're on this, why don't we'll just keep on, we still got Richie on with us, but let's talk a little bit about your compassion fatigue that, you know, I've got down here on my notes, and how to recognize when you're going to burn out.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we touched on it a little bit earlier when we were talking about work life versus, you know, or work trouble rather versus home life, where guys start to compare what they've seen on calls to what's going on at home. But I didn't realize that compassion fatigue was a real thing. And I hear children of nurses complain about this a lot. This happens to any type of caregiver. You know, we all reach a capacity where you just don't have empathy or compassion anymore because you're burned out on constantly taking care of other people. So, like, when you had mentioned your wife was complaining of a headache, and I'm sure you almost find that irritating if, you know, you just spent 24 hours on an ambulance. I think what it looks like when it comes home is the firefighter starts getting angry with anybody in the family who might be, you know, under the weather or has a legitimate complaint about something that's bothering them. You know, I remember there was a time where, like, I think I was complaining about a headache. This was several years ago. I maybe get sick twice a year. And I said, like, man, I'm just not feeling good. And my husband goes, I don't want to hear about it. I'm like, wait, what? And, like, I really had to check myself for a second. I'm like, do I complain about being sick a lot? And, like, he kind of went on this rant about he's so sick of, you know, people crying about stuff and blah, 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 and get it together. Well, then I, you know, find out that they're picking up, like, one overserved individual after another on the back of the ambulance. And, you know, that was a year that they ran something like 18,000 calls off of six ambulances. I think anybody would be burned out at that point, but I had no clue that that stuff was going on. So, you know, if you're starting to notice those kind of things and you're getting those type of responses, I would maybe look a little closer at the job and be like, hey, what's going on with you? Like, I don't know, maybe it's time to take a little break from the ambulance if possible, or schedule a vacation, something, because it's not healthy to feel that way. And I certainly don't blame you guys for feeling burned out.
It's difficult. It's really difficult. And, you know, where Richie works, it's a little bit different where I work, but like in my, we see a lot of EMS, and it's kind of going to what you're saying, Colleen, but the frequent flyers that we see on a regular basis, it's really difficult to put on that compassion face and to, okay, I just saw you literally earlier this morning for the same problem. And, you know, this is what's contributing to some of our problems in our society with, you know, medical, I mean, that's a whole nother issue, but this can easily come home with the firefighter where, you know, and like what we were saying earlier in the show where, you know, don't even give me that you have a sore throat. That's nothing, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I get it. I see how that can contribute to difficulties at home.
I would add something to that.
Go ahead. Yeah,
I would say I find out sometimes you come home, and you. I would tell my wife this a lot, that I used up all my niceness at work that I have none when I come home, like because you have to be nice to the public because you know they may call and complain or you know you know you're in the public eye. There's cell phones. There's everything out there.
Uh-huh.
So I had to be nice to some of the most ignorant people on the face of the earth with the most BS problems there can be. And I got to be cordial and polite, and I just want to be like, the hell out of here. There's nothing wrong with you, you know, whatever, and I can't. So then you come home, the patience level or the acceptance level is way down.
Yeah. Yeah, and that makes sense. And you know, I think the more the spouse realizes about the job, the easier it is to not take that personally. I mean, I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it helped me big time to understand where it was coming from. Because I started feeling like, oh, my God, am I that big of a whiner that, like, he's totally blowing this out of proportion? So just how you just said it, was that would help me tremendously, or would have back in the day. But I'm happy to understand it.
Just to add, this kind of goes back to the – and I know this is not real, but there's the thought that leave work at work – and leave home at home and don't let the two mix because that creates problems. And that is not
impossible.
We know that you bring shit from home to work and you bring shit from work home. And the thing is that just being able to recognize that this could be an issue and being able to step back and having a relationship so that your spouse can say, hey, I think you need to go and relax and go and, you know, decompress for a few minutes. Then we're going to sit down and
and we're going to have a great conversation over tea or coffee or whatever and get our day going. And it's important that my wife, she says it all the time. She's like, you know, I feel that sometimes when you come home, I just got to give you your space and let you get into being at home, and then we can live home. Because if I'm still at work in my mind and my body and I'm dealing with whatever and I come home, I haven't converted to home yet.
Yeah. And that's really hard if there's small kids involved, because, you know, there are times, unfortunately, where my husband walks through the door and I got to hand him the 2-year-old because I have to go to work, you know, and he hasn't had that chance to decompress. So you have to get things on the calendar. You have to create time for them to decompress. Like, you have to make it, you just have to make it happen. It's the only way you're going to be in a healthy relationship is if you're making time for yourself.
Absolutely.
Is that time for us, Colleen, or for you, or both?
Both. You know, it's really important that the fire.
Can I get Jill down here to tell her that? No, I'm just kidding. I'm being sarcastic. Jill, I need time for myself when I come. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've been with the kids for 24 hours, and well, now my kids are older, so it's different now. But
yeah, no, and I mean, and I totally get it. And sometimes, you know, the opportunity doesn't present itself the second you come home from work. But it's totally fair to say, hey, this afternoon, I need an hour to myself to, like, go to the gym or whatever it is that you do. There's nothing wrong with saying that. And finding babysitters, you know, I meet so many moms who are like, yeah, I don't like to leave my kids with a stranger. Well, you better find a stranger that you can trust, because your relationship needs it. And sometimes you get what you pay for, and when you hire a family member, and no offense to any of my family members, but just because it's free doesn't mean you want it, you know, because then I hear, like, the wife that's like, well, my mom watches the kids, but she lets them stay up late and drink milkshakes all night. Well, you should have paid for a sitter then and given her specific instructions, so then you're not frustrated when you come home. So it's kind of like, you really... you got to make time for yourself and your relationship. And unfortunately, you have to find a way to let someone else watch your kids. It's your kids need that too.
Right.
Well, fostering the relationship only betters the kids.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, you're setting an example for your kids of what a healthy relationship looks like. And if mom and dad are burned out all the time, because they're constantly with the kids, those kids are just going to grow up seeing mom and dad fight all the time. That's not
right,
good either.
Right, be burned out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Colleen, we've gone an hour and a half. I told
wow.
you, I said, hey, let's shoot for that hour mark. And while we've had Richie and Brian Root come on and give little things, like, it's pretty easy for us to talk for an hour and a half. And I want to give you an opportunity. Definitely. If you've got any closing remarks or anything you'd like to close with, or last little bit of advice to give out to anybody that's listening.
Yeah, I just, you know, especially during the holidays, I like to let people know, you know, all of us are struggling, as we said earlier. We're all stretched thin this time of year. That's just how it goes. Even if you're not in the fire service, you can relate to that. But one theme that I see repeated often, and I mean, this is unfortunate, but it's part of life. I listen to so many people talk about, especially during the holidays, there's always one member of the family that they're estranged from. Okay, I have yet to meet a family member where every single member of that family still talks or sees each other. Unfortunately, this is the norm. So if you're someone during the holidays that's really struggling with that, just know you're not alone. I know that's not comfortable for everyone, but that's the truth. I mean, I hear people all the time say, I haven't talked to my dad in 15 years. Or my dad's side of the family doesn't communicate with us at all, or my daughter's not speaking to me right now. It's horrible, but it's out there. And I actually almost think it's weird when people tell me that everybody in their family talks. I'm like, well, that's just because something hasn't happened yet. I mean, the truth is the closer you get to someone, the more opportunity there is to hurt each other. And that's just part of life. So, you know, just understand that this is a stressful time for all of us with families getting together. And if you're struggling with someone that you're estranged from, there's a lot of people that can relate to you. So, yeah.
Have a little bit of tolerance is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So.
Well, I want to thank you, Colleen, for coming on. You know, I hope that an opportunity to kind of cover a number of the things that you discussed in your presentation. And, you know, the problem with doing it on a podcast is it's not the same as being able to show slides.
Sure.
You know, we're kind of my expressiveness comes out and we get distracted and we get a little disorganized, but at least we get back on the back on track and get talking about our brothers and sisters and the family life that is impacted by everything that we do at work and everything that we potentially bring home. So, you know, the holidays can be very difficult, and this is what Colleen was just talking about, and that if you feel that your world or your life is out of control and or you're dealing with depression, just remember that you're not alone. And reach out to a family member, a friend, a brother, a sister you work with. Just reach out to anybody. And if you don't feel comfortable reaching out with anybody around you, there's a number of numbers you can call if you're really in trouble. 1-800-273-8255. That is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Illinois Peer Support, 855-907-8776, and that is 855-90-SUPPORT. They can get you connected in many things. And then Safe Call Now, 206-459-3020. So please reach out to somebody.
Don't forget.
And again, like I said, you're not alone. So Colleen, thank you so much. And
yeah,
Richie, I appreciate you joining the show. Do you have
my
any last
pleasure.
Words,
and don't forget about Father Jim. We got Father Jim now on our email website. So Father Jim at foolsinternational.com, another great resource, and he'll take calls anytime from Rosecrans. So
now let me back up. Did Father Jim get his own email address on the e-board?
Father Jim now is Father Jim at foolsinternational.com. That is correct.
I love
great.
It.
That's great.
Yep.
I love it. I love it.
So, in fact, ironically, I called Father Jim when I found out about PJ. Just feel like talking to him real quick, and he texted me a beautiful prayer. So, yeah, it works. Reaching out works.
Excellent.
Colleen,
so, we got new Father Jim. If you
Colleen,
seen
thank
it
you
Facebook.
So much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having
Christmas.
Me. Yeah, you
Maybe
guys
you
have an awesome
Christmas.
Maybe
at a Fool's event.
That'd be great.
Need to do something at a Fool's event. You know, I think we do a Wife's Day. Maybe there could be a little presentation for the wives. I mean, it'd be something that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think maybe we covered a quarter of what I'm used to presenting, but it was nice to kind of curtail it to the holidays anyway because we're all in the same boat.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks, Colleen. And have a wonderful
Christmas. Merry Christmas to you guys.
Thank you guys.
A good night. I'm going to close the show out. Thank you so much, Colleen.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Have a good one.